You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Godette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. It's when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this week. And today, our panel includes Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, and Nate Eaton, news director at eastidahonews.com. Hey, hello and happy Friday.
Hey,
good to you.
All right, let's get started with the Teton Pass. 3 weeks after a massive landslide closed it down, apparently it's going to open back up. Nate, you want to start us off with this because you're closer to it than
we actually have some breaking news here in the last 10 minutes. Ooh. We've got the word that it's back open.
Oh, wow.
This, of course, was a catastrophic failure. Those were the words that the Wyoming Department of Transportation used earlier this month when this highly traveled pass closed. It started off as a landslide, and then there was a mudslide. There was a crack in the road, and suddenly the road just collapsed. So they've been working around the clock to get this pass open. This is the road that people take on Highway 22 between Idaho and Wyoming to get into Jackson to get over to Wyoming, and it's been kind of a major inconvenience. But what they've done is they've temporarily put in a fix and basically built up kind of a side road and paved it. They say it's structurally sound, and that beginning today, anybody that needs to travel between Idaho and Wyoming on this route can begin using it.
And the closure was a pretty big deal because that could be a 3-hour workaround, as they say. But it's opening back up, and this is going to be slow to get through, but you're going to be able to get through.
You're going to be able to get through. Yeah, major detour to get around this. And if you think about it, a lot of people, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, it can be expensive to live there. And so a lot of people that work in Jackson live in Driggs, which is just on the other side of the border into Idaho. And so people would commute daily to go from their jobs. And companies, I guess you could say the government came together to provide shuttle services for commuters. And they've been, it's been a pain. It's been a big pain. But they're saying that this workaround will make it possible for all vehicles to go through. In fact, I think it holds 60,000 pounds. That's the weight restriction as the road opens. And all traffic, including trailer traffic, will be allowed. But YDOT encourages drivers to be aware of the reduced speed. They've lowered the speed in the area and, of course, follow the traffic signs. But as this is now open, they're going to be working on a permanent repair. They've consulted with geologists and other experts to make sure that everything is okay as far as the movement of the dirt and the soil in the area. So hopefully this can, get people in their summer travel, get them there a lot quicker than having to go all the way around, as you mentioned, Samantha, 2 to 3 hour detour.
And Kevin, when we first talked about this, we found out that you had traveled over the pass just not long before it failed. And if you haven't seen those pictures, they are pretty dramatic of this highway just falling down a giant cliff. I want to get your thoughts on this. Having gone through there and having seen the destruction after it failed, are you comfortable going back over?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the footage and the photos from the slide are pretty dramatic. And, what I'm going to be most interested in watching going forward, the folks who work in Jackson and live in Teton Valley, Idaho, I mean, they've been through a major inconvenience these past 3 weeks, with this having to go on this 3-hour detour each way to get to work. I mean, that's not sustainable. So I think those folks, they have no choice, but they're going to have to use this new detour. And, they're locals. They're probably more experienced driving on Teton Pass. So I would imagine that most of them will adjust fairly easily. But this is the height of tourist season too. And this is kind of a dicey road to drive on if you are not from the area and you're not familiar with driving on mountain passes. This is a pretty pretty treacherous road. It's a pr pretty technical road. You have to kind of know what you're doing and keep your eyes on the road and be slow and be cautious. And I just wonder, how will drivers who aren't familiar with mountain passes deal with a detour that it sounds like the detour is a little bit more steep. It's supposed to be slower. Hopefully, motorists will take heed of that warning. So, it's good news, obviously, for a lot of folks in that valley that there's a new course, that there's a new way to get over the pass. So we'll just have to see what kind of accident rates we see.
It is a good cautionary tale. I would agree. Let's go to some more breaking news this morning. Kevin, you want to unveil this one? State Board of Education met, and as you wrote just a few hours ago, pressed the reset button on the University of Phoenix purchase. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's kind of a detour of a different kind, right? So the state board met this morning, and what they essentially decided on and voted unanimously on is a 1-year extension in the negotiations between the University of Idaho and the University of Phoenix. As you know, this deal has been in the works now for well over a year, but it hasn't been finalized. There have been legal obstacles, there has been legislative pushback, so no deal has been in place. The two parties, U of I and Phoenix, have been talking through June. They had this opt-out deadline, this optional opt-out deadline that came and went on May 31st. The two parties stayed at the table. What the state board did today was kind of formalize the process that will allow the two parties to continue to negotiate until June of 2025. A couple of big points in this agreement. U of I is going to get $5 million immediately from the University of Phoenix and its owners. And that's sort of a fee that's going to help to offset some of the $11 million that we know of that the university has spent on consulting, on due diligence, looking at the possible purchase. So that's a big element here. And there are clauses in this agreement that would give U of I even more money from Phoenix if there is no deal come next year, or if Phoenix decides to go with another buyer. Because that's the flip side of this deal, Samantha. It allows Phoenix and its owners, Apollo Global Management, to talk to other potential buyers. They had kind of an exclusive arrangement talking only to U of I. That is no longer in place. Phoenix can talk to other potential buyers. They can even pursue the idea, and this is a new wrinkle that I hadn't heard about until this week. They can pursue an IPO. They can go public if they chose to go that route. But again, if they do either of those things, U of I would stand to get up to $15 million in additional fees from Phoenix as kind of a breakup fee that would help, again, to offset some of the money that the U of I has spent pursuing this purchase.
So, another year to try and figure something out.
And importantly, what it sets the stage for, really, Samantha, is the legislature. The 2025 session coming up in January. This year's legislature definitely was skeptical about this deal, put the brakes on the deal. There's probably still considerable skepticism in the legislature. We'll just have to wait and see if the U of I and Phoenix and legislators can come up with something that they can all live with in terms of the structure of the deal. They didn't get it done this year. So we'll see what happens next legislative session. It'll be, I would imagine, a very heated debate about this proposal.
Absolutely, absolutely. Nate, you've got a dual story. Chad Daybell's house is for sale, and Lori Vallow Daybell's Arizona attorneys are open to delay her trial. But if I read that right, she doesn't want to do that. Update us here.
Yeah, this is the story I think that will never end. The interesting bit of news here in Eastern Idaho is that this property where those two children were buried and found, and also, just steps away from the bedroom where Tammy Daybell died, is now for sale. And it actually is owned by Chad Daybell's attorney, John Pryor. He took ownership of the home back in 2021. And less than a month since we've had the verdict and the sentencing, it's on the market. And it's an interesting listing because the realtors are being told that only serious inquiries will be accepted, that people will be vetted, that you have to be seriously looking for a home. It can't just be for anybody that is curious and wants to go by and look at the house, which has actually happened over the past 4 years. There have been people that have just slowly driven by the property, taken photos of the house, people that are curious about where these crimes happened. So the asking price is $350,000. It's an older home. It's on several acres and in a rural area, which normally for this area, that would be a pretty good price to for somebody that wanted to, live out on farmland. And it will be interesting to see if there are any offers and if this house actually, somebody takes it or if somebody decides to buy the home and bulldoze it. But it's gotten a lot of people talking on social media. And on the same day that we reported this, Lori Vallow, her attorneys in Arizona, where she faces conspiracy to commit murder charges, they have asked the judge to delay her trial, which is scheduled to begin August 1st. But they say they are nowhere ready. These are three public defenders. Two of them are fairly new to the case. And they say they have 100,000 pages to go through. They have recordings, videotapes,
Wow.
just a massive amount of evidence. Lori wants the trial right away. She has not waived her right to a speedy trial. It's something she did not do in Idaho as well. And that's why they had to take death penalty off the table. And so there'll be a hearing next Tuesday where the judge will decide whether this trial gets pushed off until next February, which her attorneys are suggesting, or whether it goes ahead in a month. If it does, her attorneys say we cannot adequately represent her and we just won't be ready. So there'll be yet one more trial in connection to this case.
Wow. And I know you'll be following it because you have since the beginning.
Yeah, we'll be following it and we'll see what happens. She does not face the death penalty in Arizona, and that trial should be significantly shorter than the ones in Idaho. But she is still charged with two conspiracy to commit murder charges. So she could face life in prison regardless of what she is sentenced to there, assuming she's found guilty. She will be moved back to Idaho to serve out her life sentence as she is an Idaho inmate.
Gotcha. Kevin, digging down with a little analysis or a lot of analysis on party platforms and education issues. This is a fascinating story. Give us a preview, or a concise analysis of the analysis, I guess I would say.
Okay. Well, you had the two party conventions earlier this month. The Republicans were 2 weeks ago. The Democrats were last weekend. And I was struck by the stark differences between what we were seeing in the platforms from the two parties on education. There's always going to be disagreement between Republicans and Democrats about education. But this time around, yeah, the Republicans passed some language into the platform that calls for not funding higher education. I mean, it basically calls for not putting taxpayer money into programs beyond high school. And it contradicts language elsewhere in the Republican platform. And I had a chance last week to talk to, well, not talk to, but do kind of an email interview with the author of that new language in the platform to ask him exactly what his objective was. And his objective is to defund higher education.
Wow.
This is not just directed at Idaho Launch, the post-secondary scholarship program that has generated so much controversy at the State House. This particular Republican delegate from Caldwell wants to defund higher education, and the Republican platform now includes that language. Democrats in their platform came out in favor of higher education, not really in a lot of detail, but in light of what the Republicans passed the previous week, it was fairly significant. Big difference between the two parties on school choice. Democrats coming strongly out against any form of school choice, any kind of, as they put it, voucher scheme. Republicans maintained language in their platform supporting school choice. So whether we're talking about higher ed funding or launch or school choice, I think the battle lines are pretty clear going into the next legislative session. Parties really starkly divided on education issues. Really, the Republican platform, I think what's interesting too, it's not just drawing a distinction between the two parties. Within the Republican Party, there's a good deal of disagreement because that language on higher ed funding drew criticism from Governor Little, Lieutenant Governor Scott Bedke, State Superintendent Debbie Critchfield had questions about what exactly this is all about. So there's difference of opinion within the GOP, in addition to differences of opinion between the Republicans and the Democrats.
And it's a great analysis. We'll link to it. Check it out. Nate, I love this story. This is a great story that that you had about a white buffalo that was born in Yellowstone. And I understand, I think if you told me correctly, this is the first one ever that we know has been born there.
Yes, this is quite a fascinating story. So apparently, the beginning of the month, around June 4th, the Yellowstone National Park received multiple reports and photos of a white bison calf taken from park visitors and wildlife watchers. Researchers saw it in commercial guides. And so there's photos that are out there. But to this date, park staff have not been able to find the calf. There's been no confirmed sightings of the calf since June 4th. So it was seen multiple times by multiple people, but it just has not been seen since then. And this morning, there's been a lot of buzz about this calf, which if you go look at our website, we have a picture of it. It is completely white and with black eyes, hooves. There's some pigmentation. And they're saying that this phenomenon occurs one in a million births or even less frequently.
Wow.
And this is the first one. They've never received a report of a white calf being born in Yellowstone, and that it's culturally significant for Native Americans, which yesterday at the park, or outside of the park, I should say, there was a kind of a ceremony or an honoring of this white buffalo. And they've revealed its names, that the Spirit Lake tribe is calling this buffalo Wakan Glee. And they got together outside of Yellowstone National Park. People cheered. The name, it means return sacred in the Lakota Native American language. And so this could be quite interesting. I think there'll be a lot of people that will now want to travel up to Yellowstone National Park this summer to try to get a sighting of this white bison, assuming, you know, it's still alive, assuming it's still there. So yeah, kind of a interesting historical event happening at Yellowstone.
Yeah. And as you said, very culturally significant, white buffalo, very, very sacred, to a lot of folks. So I think that's fascinating. And the story we didn't get a chance to talk about a Rexburg woman who has qualified for the Paris Olympic Games, that is on your website, and I highly recommend checking it out. And I want to say thanks to our reporter roundtable, Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, and Nate Eaton, news director at eastidahonews.com, who both gave us some of their very valuable time today. Thanks for the great reporting. And Nate, have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good seeing you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.